I was thinking about in the couple decades since I've become a churchgoer, I've encountered something that I think is a pretty common notion in faith, and it's something I've actually grown increasingly wary of. It's how the biblical tradition's encouragement to serve God is often talked about in America. It's talked about as having to entail something like doing hard labor for Jesus. Like, serving God is something akin to God being the Crawley family from Downton Abbey, and we are the servants downstairs. If we want connection with God, we must do the hard work of pleasing him. Shine his shoes. Bring him breakfast in bed. Do you ever notice how much they have breakfast in bed in Downton Abbey? It's really nice. So God is going to ask us to do some hard stuff, unpleasant stuff. But hey, it's what we got to do to keep the master happy, right? Keep it, stay in the good graces of the master. So the heart of this, I think, is born out of it's an American truism that in a lot of ways I actually don't dislike. It, like, nothing good in life comes easy. It's part of that, like, pull yourself up by your bootstraps ideal American work ethic. And in a lot of ways, I totally believe in that. I do think that in a lot of ways, nothing good comes easy. But in the case of faith, I think it can have some negative consequences and make us believe that if connection with God is a good thing, it's got to feel hard. It's got to feel like hard labor. And so people learn to talk of God as though he is an aloof master with a, you know, a long list of lordly Downton Abbey things to attend to. And we are his servants, and we must attend to them, his demands, so that he can do those things that are so important. And we learn to live for those few and far between experiences when it's like the episode of Downton Abbey when the master comes down to the servants' quarters, and everybody's like, oh my gosh, you're here. And even the master is like, what am I doing here? But we're all like, you're the best master ever. Thank you for coming in. We should be waiting on you, God, but you're waiting on us. How amazing. And we content ourselves to believe that we should just, like, wait for those things when they happen. But otherwise, serving God is hard labor. It's just trucking it for Jesus. So I have my own experience with this. I didn't grow up in an intensely religious environment. I wasn't taught to serve God as a kid. But I did grow up in an environment that taught me to be a people pleaser. And I don't know if anyone has experience with being a people pleaser. But it can have the same result when applied to a spiritual life. So my childhood was largely marked by downplaying my deepest needs and desires so that my siblings' deepest needs and desires could be served, and then so my parents' deepest desires and needs could be served, and then later on in life, so my peers' and friends' deepest desires could be served. So when I became a praying person, in a lot of ways, I fit right into this American, like, serve God ideal. God, my needs and desires don't matter. I'm here for you. What do you need done, God? I'm ready for the hard labor. You know, put me in, coach. I'm ready. I promise I won't get passive aggressive. Just put me in, coach. So a lot of my earliest fumblings of relationship with God, fumbling into that, I think were colored by this notion that I'm here to bring Jesus breakfast and shine his shoes. Not literally, obviously, but, you know, like that was the gist behind any act of faith that I would do. Was that, I'm buckling down for Jesus. Everybody kind of laughs. I'm going to use a different analogy type. Trucking it, buckling down. What else? What else we got out there? Okay. So actually, I do think that there is a different and maybe surprisingly joyful approach to serving God. And I think it's woven into the Jesus tradition and the Bible's tradition, and it can be extremely helpful to anyone's spiritual life. It has been extremely helpful to mine, and that's what I want to talk about today. But it is not the popular American sense of serving God. And I do want to make that clear right from the start here, because religious and non-religious Americans alike all take for granted this misconceived notion that hard labor for Jesus is what anyone is talking about when we talk about serving God. Hard labor for Jesus is what the Bible is talking about when serving God is encouraged and we see words like that, like serve God. This is how I think half of the people I meet in life respond when they ask, what do you do for a living? And I say, I'm a pastor. Like, whether they're religious or not themselves, their responses have behind them some sort of, like, self-deprecating awe, like, wow, you must be I've really been meaning to bring Jesus breakfast more, but you're like breakfast in bed every morning. Like, wow. And I think about that. And I know it, like, people are trying to be complimentary, and that's very kind. But despite how my faith began, serving God for me today is really not at all about hard labor for Jesus. I do want to make that clear. The trouble is, this notion of serving God, it sounds right to our American sensibilities. Again, even if we're rejecting the idea, it sounds like, yeah, that's what those religious people, or that's what Vince the pastor think when they talk about serving God. But I don't think that is what's at the heart of our faith when we are encouraged to serve God. So if we peel back the layers, I think that this notion is so American, it's kind of hilarious. And it would be more hilarious, that's kind of why I'm poking fun at it a little bit, but it would be more hilarious, I think, if some of the consequences weren't so sad. Because I've just been talking about how this affects personal relationships with God, but far more consequential is the way that this affects society at large. When we conceive of what it means to serve God or pursue Jesus or pursue what is right in the world, and this is the foundation we're building on, well, this is building on that foundation is every theology in history that has defended institutional racism or slavery. It's taking texts that are all about serving God and then somebody powerful delivering it and saying, therefore, be subservient to me. I'm the master. And so this is serious stuff that requires investigating. So my question for us today is, what actually is the Jesus and the biblical tradition getting at when it encourages us to serve God? And to address that, we're going to dive deeper into the Gospel of Luke, one of the four biographies that kick off the New Testament of the Bible. A couple of weeks ago, I mentioned that my next many talks here at BLV are going to be drawing from Luke for our inspiration. And the central question that we brought up a couple of weeks ago when we first did this, that this is sort of the central question that ties the Gospel of Luke together. And it is, what kind of world do we want to live in? Luke's unique contribution to the picture that we have of Jesus is big questions like this one, where they were a guiding force to him. So in his teachings and his actions, Jesus in Luke, we see that he is pointing people again and again toward expanding their moral imaginations beyond just themselves, beyond just their tribe, to include more people, to include people different from them, to include experiences different from them, to as broad a sense as they can imagine. So he's sort of like, if we're wondering, what is the good life? What is the righteous life, to use the religious word? Well, what kind of world do you want to live in, is Luke's response to that. What kind of world do you want your children to inherit from you? That's a good start for trying to figure out what is the right way to live. And Luke's Jesus has lots to say about how serving God is involved in this expanding of our moral imaginations. So I want to take a look at some of the passages that bring that up. First off, in Luke chapter 4, so this is very early on in Jesus's public ministry, and he is being tempted in the desert. We talked about his temptation in the wilderness, his time of trial in the wilderness, and he famously, to draw strength, appeals to the Ten Commandments, which say, worship the Lord your God and serve him only. So obviously there is some high regard there for serving God from Jesus. This is something that matters. It's not something we can shrug off. Likewise, in Luke chapter 17, Jesus says to his disciples this: suppose one of you has a servant plowing or looking after the sheep. Will he say to the servant when he comes in from the field, come along now and sit down and eat? Won't he rather say, prepare my supper, get yourself ready and wait on me while I eat and drink? After that, you may eat and drink. Will he thank the servant because he did what he was told to do? So you also, when you have done everything you were told to do, should say, we are unworthy servants. We have only done our duty. Sounds pretty Downton Abbey, right? Or at least like Downton Abbey servant adjacent, right? But there's more to this puzzle that Jesus gives us. So let's move on to my next passage. Luke 22. Jesus, again, teaching to his disciples, says this: the greatest among you should be like the youngest, and the one who rules like the one who serves. For who is greater, the one who is at the table or the one who serves? Is it not the one who is at the table? But I am among you as one who serves. Do you catch the flipping of the expected there in that line from Jesus? He asks, is it not like the most honored person is the one sitting at the table? It's not the servant, right? And I imagine him like pausing for dramatic effect, and his disciples are like, yeah, of course, oh, of course, it's the person who's at the table. And then he says, but I am among you as one who serves. Well, that's a little bit backwards. Interesting. This second piece of the puzzle from Luke is that the God Jesus is here to show the world is himself a servant. Now, this is a theme throughout the Gospel of Luke, and it's most explicitly said here. So we should serve God. That's up there in these passages. We should serve God. But God is a servant himself. And how does that work? God's masterness is defined as servitude. That's the unique, like, subversive thing here. This is not American conceptions of service, which teach us to expect that faith is hard labor for an aloof master, and which reinforces our prejudices and power structures. This is something different. Now, I think the kind of like combination of these two backwards or things that shouldn't go together, the tension is most captured in a different passage from Luke chapter 12. This is another of Jesus' teachings. See how the two things come together here. Be dressed, ready for service, and keep your lamps burning, like servants waiting for their master to return from a wedding banquet, so that when he comes and knocks, they can immediately open the door for him. It will be good for those servants whose master finds them watching when he comes. Truly, I tell you, he will dress himself to serve, will have them recline at the table, and will come and wait on them. The master waits on the servants, according to Jesus here. So this is just really interesting. I guess the question is, how does one serve the God who is himself a servant? How does that work? And I have an analogy to pass on that many theologians have used, and it's helped me a ton, and it's actually helped a lot of people at our church. This is one of our favorite analogies for helping people into experience of God. So perhaps you've heard us mention it before. It's the difference between serving God as a doctor, as a good doctor, versus serving God as a bad boss. So let's take the bad one first, okay? So we serve a bad boss. Why do we serve a bad boss? Because they need the benefit of our hard work for their purposes, and so we can get a paycheck in return. But we work hard for them reluctantly, right? Because they're a bad boss. We say the right things to their face, but inwardly we are racked with frustration toward them because what they need from us is, it's clearly communicated to us, is more important than to them as us than us as people. We're not important to them. It's what they get out of us. And perhaps we are constantly asking ourselves, is my paycheck worth all of this? That's what it's like to serve a bad boss. I wonder if there are some parallels with that, if the way that we might hear Americans sometimes talk about their religious experience. On the other hand, we serve a good doctor. We follow a doctor's orders, not because she needs the benefit of our working hard to do so, but because we need the benefit of our working hard to do so, to follow a doctor. The frustrations of serving a doctor might have to do with the inconvenience of like recovering from a procedure or living out a new diet or exercise plan that they're passing to us. But it's not frustration at the doctor for putting their needs in front of ours, right? Like, a doctor is by definition there for your health. They're here for your self-interest, not for theirs. Now, approaching God as a good doctor, what I'm suggesting to us here, can feel a little bit scandalous and a little bit selfish to many who have spent a great deal of time in churches being taught to serve God because he's worthy or because he deserves it or because he demands it. But I don't think that this approach, serving God as a doctor, is so much selfish as it is humble. Like, this approach acknowledges that we are the ones who need things, not God. God doesn't need things from us. It's us. We're the needy ones in this relationship. It's sort of a, like a ridiculous cosmic role reversal to not approach God as a good doctor. Because I think there's this really funny line, I think, from the Psalms in Psalm 50. And the psalmist is writing from God's perspective. And the line is, "The cattle on a thousand hills are mine. If I was hungry, I wouldn't tell you." That's the line from the Psalms. And I just kind of love that. Like, yeah, like, this isn't about God's needs. God is not hungry. He doesn't need us to serve him breakfast. This is about we human beings are so needy and we screw up everything. We are the ones with needs. And God's great entry into our world is such a gift because he promises to help with those needs. He promises to serve those needs. So this helps me make sense of this. You know, Jesus himself even used the analogy that he is a good doctor. He told people that it is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. And he told people to self-identify as sick and in need of a doctor, and then you will connect with me. This helps me. It makes sense of this interesting picture from throughout Luke that God is asking us to serve him, but he's showing us that he himself is a servant. To serve God is to let God serve us in some interesting way. To serve God is to let God serve us. And the reason, I think, is because that's what turns us into willing and joyful servants, into generous givers of our own resources. You remember this great question that we're talking about is at the center of Luke's gospel. What kind of world do we want to live in? I think the Jesus that we see in Luke is asking us, like, don't you want to live in a world where joyful service makes everything go round? Don't you want to live in a world where I can birth joyful service in you? I think that's what's on offer here. That's what we're wading into. That's what we can potentially draw from here. So I mentioned that in my childhood, I developed a people-pleasing habit, a problem, and that I took that to my relationship with God early on because that was all I knew. All I knew in relationships was how to please others and how to put their needs in before mine. Now, in those early years of trying to connect with God that way and doing my people-pleasing and just applying that to my relationship with God, I definitely experienced some personal growth and maturity during those first years. I don't want to say it was like worthless time, but that time was not making me much of a servant. So all of my growth during that time, I think, was like internal, like self-esteem stuff. It was hope and purpose kind of things that I was engaging. And that was all really important. But outwardly, to other people, I think I was still a pretty hurt, entitled kid waiting for everybody to wait on me because I was convinced that I'd been waiting on everybody else my entire life. I still felt like everything is scarce, and therefore I need to be stingy with what I have. If I was going to get something in return, I might serve somebody, but it's not really service, right? That's a transaction. So honestly, it was learning this doctor analogy that I'm talking about today for the first time when my relationship with God really started to grow the way I think I was experienced by others. It really started to make me more of a servant of other people. So I'm a cerebral person, so like hearing a new idea like excites me, and that's probably why this had such an impact. I heard that and I was like, that explains everything. And so I followed my nose to it. But this shift from trying to hard labor for God to instead serving God by letting God serve me made anything good in life that I experienced feel like a gift. That was the biggest shift that happened. Everything is a gift. Wow, everything good in life is a gift. And with so many things feeling like a gift, like this whole mindset of I've been waiting on the world and nobody's waiting on me just started to disappear because I felt like there were gifts coming at me everywhere. I didn't feel the need to be stingy anymore. I remember when a family member with whom I'd previously had felt a lot of dread being around because of my history of people-pleasing with them, I remember they ended up in crisis. And I found myself totally ready to be there for them. Not at all looking for the transaction, not at all thinking, oh, here it goes again. None of those feelings in mind. I was totally ready and full of a heart to serve them and be present to them in this crisis. I think letting God serve me turns me into a more generous and willing and joyful servant myself. So if I can leave us with some practical thoughts here that are maybe obvious, but it's worth kind of hitting on its head. My first suggestion for us is not to serve God like a bad boss. So if you notice, look for the Downton Abbey servant in your prayers. If you notice any of that, oh, Lord, you have your things to attend to and humble me. I come before thee with breakfast. Would you listen to my requests, please? If you notice any of that, like, just gently redirect yourself. Don't shame yourself. Like, I'm kind of being overly silly, and that maybe that's not fair. Just gently redirect yourself and say, self, that's not actually the God we're talking about. The God we're talking about looks like Jesus, the good doctor. Doesn't look like the Lord of the Downton Abbey household. And so gently redirect yourself if that's happening. Number two, maybe it's obvious, do serve God as a good doctor. And so for me, this was, as I mentioned, as simple as teaching myself to see anything good in my life as a gift from the God who wants to serve me, as a prescription for my health from the good doctor upstairs. That was where it started. But to get practical in a different way, I'll throw one last Luke passage at you that maybe helps. In Luke chapter 16, Jesus famously sums up a story that he's just told by saying, you cannot serve both God and money. Has anyone ever heard that one before? You cannot serve both God and money. I once heard someone explain that it can shine light on how practically we might serve God by considering the thing we're not recommended to do there, serve money, okay? So obviously, if we're figuring out what does it mean to serve money, it doesn't make sense if we're like, you know, bring breakfast to money, like do take care of things for money so money can come home after a long day's work and put its feet up. Oh, money, you've worked so hard. Put your feet up, money. I'm going to do this one for you. That doesn't make sense, right? What does it mean to serve money? Like what we're driving at there is you're banking your hope for a happy future on money, right? Like that's what's meant there, we serve money. And so on the flip side, then we can understand serve God to mean banking your hope for a happy future on God, right? Like we would be unwise to bank our hope for a happy future all on money. We're throwing it all on money, and if we, you know, if the stock market crashes, we're screwed. No, that's unwise. So the encouragement from Jesus is to bank your hope for a happy future on something bigger, on God. Perhaps that feels practical. Like we can use that to guide how I might pray, what my prayers sound like, what it sounds like when I'm trying to interact with God. God, this season of my life has been so hard for X reason. I am banking my hope on you, not on changed circumstances. Help me to feel your encouragement or your love or your peace in the midst of this. I'm banking my hope for a happy future on you. That's a way that we can pray. That's a prayer that serves God by letting him serve us. Or maybe you can say, God, I am exhausted about our country. I am exhausted. I am banking on you for fresh inspiration. I'm banking on you for perspective, for opportunity. What do you have for me, God? What do you have for us? I'm banking on you. That's another way that we might pray. To serve God is to let God serve us. And I think what happens when we do this is that eventually we become so full of joy and gratitude that we overflow to other people. We, just like the God that Jesus shows us, become generous and joyful and willing servants. That's how it happens. Like I experienced, this can take time. You know, this is actually not the fastest way to get somebody to serve somebody else, which is maybe why it's not popular in America to talk about God this way. This is not very fast. It requires something happening internally before we can live out of it. But if a lifelong commitment to serving others is our hope, and honestly, if things are going to change in the way that we regularly experience this world, and just think about your world, just like from thing to thing, if things are going to change, we can't have short-term sparks of like, I'm going to serve other people on willpower. I'm just going to do this because I'm going to grit and bear it. We have to have service that is coming from a lifelong commitment. Service that's coming from a deep place inside us that actually feels like we are so served by someone who cares for us, by a God who cares for us, that we can willingly give again and again and again for the sake of others. If it's not starting in that internal place, we're going to burn out after a year. And that's what this is about. This is not actually the fastest way for me to become a servant of others, but it is the most surefire way that I might be a servant of others for my entire life, as I slowly, gradually claw my way toward that from whatever sort of misguided beginnings we might have, as I have in my own story of trying to relate to God. We all generally, because we're American, are going to start from that God is a bad, God is Lumberg from Office Space and we have to turn in our TPS reports. We're probably all going to start from somewhere like that. But we are called, especially by the Jesus that Luke shows us, to build something different, to conceive of our relationship with God differently in a way that will serve us for our whole lives. And then we can see that service birthed in us. And I do really see, I see that happen in the people who I most see able to look out and just experience all of life is a gift from a good doctor that is taking care of them. Those are the people who I can see serve others for a lifetime. So I would love to pray for us in that space if I could. Can I ask you to stand with me? And I'm going to pray for us. All right. Well, feel free to keep your eyes open or close your eyes. I'm going to pray for us. Just help yourself feel comfortable in this space. Oh God, I pray for anyone who does feel like, first, just right off the bat, anyone who does feel like it's a little bit scandalous or it's a little bit selfish for me to believe in this whole serve God by letting him serve me. For anyone who's feeling that right now, maybe it's true. Vince isn't a genius. He doesn't know everything. Maybe that's the case. But if we could put that on the shelf for a minute and just ask you, God, to serve us, let's see what happens, if we can just have an experiment. And so if that's you, I encourage you to have an experiment for a moment. And then, Jesus, I do ask, if I'm at all onto anything, that you are this strange God, that you ask us to serve us, but also what serving you means to let us have you serve us. We let you do that now. We let you in. We present to you what we're exhausted about. We present to you what we're troubled by. We present to you the symptoms of our current illness, whatever it is. And we ask that you would be our good doctor now. And you would speak to us. And you would guide us. You would help us to feel healed and balanced. I'm just going to leave just a moment longer for anyone for whom something is going on internally. We're just going to let that play out just a minute longer. And in this space, with all of us here together, Jesus, I also long for this community. Personally, I long for this community to be a place that is marked by servanthood, that it just like serves other people willingly, generously, joyfully. If we are going to be that, Jesus, we need to feel that from you first. So what does it look like in each of our internal walks to serve you by letting you serve us? And then to let that change us. That we would find ourselves ready and willing and joyful at the chance of serving another. What is a step forward for us today? For us individually? I pray that you would speak to each of us who would welcome that now. Of what is a step in that direction for me right now? I don't have to do everything in one fell swoop. But what is a step in that direction for me?